Here's 78 on 78, News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Marshall. The famous French detective Eugène Valmont rarely, in his brilliant international career, came across such an equal as he meets in the story about to unfold. A war of nerves turns into a battle of wits, which I am happy to report to you from the front lines.
Jean-Pierre, shine your flashlight onto the desk so that I can examine the papers.
Monsieur Valmont, it's hard to believe Dr. Willoughby could be up to something so underhanded.
Are you speaking of Dr. Willoughby, alias the aged messenger, alias Ralph Summertrees? I doubt if he is as innocent as he looks, but let us wait and see what I find here.
Mystery drama, adapted from the classic story by Robert Barr, has been dramatized especially for the Mystery Theater by Gerald Keane and stars Norman Rose.
It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Basically, you're kind of a procrastinator, aren't you?
Can I get back to you later on that?
But you don't just put things off. No, sir, you put things off for a reason.
See, when are these snow shovels going on sale?
August. I'll wait.
But what about the 2 feet of snow in our driveway, Wally?
It'll melt.
Well, for you purposeful procrastinators, Buick has some very good news. At this time of year, your Buick dealer may get very accommodating when it comes to deals. On compact, fun-to-drive Skylarks, roomy, comfortable Centuries, luxurious Regals, even full-size LeSabres and elegant Electras. Now, while we hate to hurry you, this is what a lot of other procrastinators have been waiting for, too. So stop dawdling, because you can afford a Buick. Yes, you can. Right now, at your Buick dealers.
Am I too late?
No, sir. I'd say you're just in time.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Joseph Wagner, the master designer at York Furrier, spreads the Russian sable jacket across his work table. Deep in thought, he examines every inch of the fur, searching for flaws only his expert eyes can see. He has just restyled the fur, transforming it to the look of tomorrow. This inspection is the final step before storage. He nods his head slightly, then gently carries the jacket to the cold storage vault. He places the fur in a specially designed hanger, steps back, mentally measures the distance to the next fur. For every fur must have breathing room. That and the temperature and humidity control will keep the fur rich and supple. At York Furrier, 107 North York in Elmhurst, a master craftsman is doing what he does best. We are in England, the late 1800s. An American president has just been elected, and the London newsboys are shouting something about the defeat of free silver. A man with deep-set eyes and sharp features, wearing a long cape, buys a newspaper and hurries home. He is Eugène Valmont.
I simply could not find a cab in the fog, so I walked all the way to my flat. After dinner, I opened the paper and sat before the fire. The eloquent Mr. Bryan had been defeated in the election. I was sorry to read that. A man with such a gift of words. Come in, Jean-Pierre. What is it?
Monsieur Valmont, Inspector Spencer Hale is here to see you.
At this hour? I'll show him in then.
Oui, monsieur. Glad to find you home, Valmont. Mind if I shut the door?
Of course. It is only the barbaric Americans who leave all the doors in their houses open. But since you make a point of asking, Inspector, I presume you have something of a very confidential nature to discuss.
I would say so.
A totally unnecessary precaution. My man, Jean-Pierre, is also my assistant. When I decided to retire from the service, he asked to retire with me. Do sit by the fire, Inspector.
I see you're reading the evening paper. I'm glad that man Brian was defeated.
These Americans, such strange people. Of course he was defeated. A millionaire running for the presidency in a democracy where the average voter is as poor as a French peasant. Now, what important matter has brought London's chief inspector to my poor apartment on such a night?
Vermont, you're a clever man. So when I tell you the question which has brought me here tonight is the same on which the American election was fought, I know I need say no more.
Free silver, Inspector?
Yes, entirely too free.
Tell me, dear friend, have they eluded you?
Who?
Why, the counterfeiters.
I'll be. Vermont, that was just a lucky shot.
Perhaps.
Well, tell me how you guessed it.
Very simple, mon ami. The question on which the American election was fought was the price of silver, which is so low it ruined William Jennings Bryan. Silver troubles America, ergo silver troubles Scotland Yard. It is not the theft of silver, but the price of silver, the very low price. Ergo, someone must be counterfeiting British coins and making a large profit.
Vermont, you've hit it. I'll say that for you. Banged it right on the noggin. You see, there's a gang of expert counterfeiters who are putting out real silver money and making a clear shilling on every half crown.
I gather you do not know who the counterfeiters are.
No. But we know the man who's shoving the stuff.
So you go from A to B and find out.
So far, no luck. Which is why I've come to see you tonight. To see if you would do one of your French tricks for us on the quiet.
What French tricks, Monsieur Hale?
No offense intended. No, I need someone to go through a man's house without a search warrant. Spot the evidence. Let me know. And then we'll rush the place before he's had time to hide the goods.
Oh, I see. Who is this man and where does he live?
Well, his name is Ralph Summertrees, and he lives in a very posh four-story in Park Lane.
And why do you suspect him?
Park Lane is an expensive district to live in. Now, this Summertrees has no ostensible business. Yet every Friday, he goes to the United Capital Bank in Piccadilly and deposits bags of silver coins.
And they are, of course, the real thing, not counterfeit.
Naturally. But it's no great problem to go around London with a pocket full of counterfeit five-shilling pieces, buy this, that, and the other, get the change, and come home with legitimate coin.
Why don't you nab him on his way out when he's got a pocket full of counterfeits?
Well, we thought of that. But we want to land the whole gang. And if we arrest him for passing, who's ever doing the counterfeiting will escape.
And you know for certain this Summerfield...
But Summertrees?
Yes, that he is not the counterfeiter.
Well...
Of course you do. You've got one of your own men working in his house. Unfortunately, your man has not come up with any evidence.
But you've hit it again, Vermont. I've got a man called Podgers working his butler there, but...
He has come up with nothing, huh? Tell me, how does the money get to this Summertrees in Park Lane?
It's brought there every night by a man who looks like an elderly, respectable city clerk. He puts it in a large safe in the dining room on the ground floor.
Have you had the clerk followed?
Oh, certainly. Oh, what do you take us for? Now, according to Podgers, he sleeps every night in the Park Lane house and in the morning goes to an antique shop in Tottenham Court Road, spends the day there, and every evening returns to Park Lane with a bag of money.
And you would rather not arrest and question him either, hmm?
Oh, for the same reason. He's merely a messenger. What good would it do to put the go-betweens in the clink, letting the real criminals escape?
Hmm. Nothing suspicious about the antique shop?
Nothing that we can discover.
Then let us see what I can discover. Do you happen to have a counterfeit five-shilling piece on you?
Yes, I do.
Good, give it to me. I may be able to put it to good use. Oh, my. It certainly is a faithful reproduction.
Using pure silver, these counterfeiters can make a five-shilling piece for practically nothing. I mean, the actual silver is worth no more than sixpence.
Fancy that. Now, to get back to your suspect, Summer Leaves.
No, no, Summer Trees.
Yes, of course, that's what I meant. Does he have any women servants in his house?
No, all men. A butler, a valet, and a French cook.
A French cook? This case begins to interest me. Real French cooking. You know, I might take your man Podger's place and play the butler, since I gather he has not discovered anything.
Oh, he's done a good job. Everything a man can do. Naturally, he doesn't have your experience.
Now, what does this Summerfield do all day?
Well, Podgers thinks he's a writer. Locks himself up from morning till evening in his study.
Doesn't he come out for lunch?
Now he has a hot plate in his study. Makes his own coffee, has a little pantry, and has a sandwich.
Well, pretty frugal fare for Park Lane.
Oh, he makes up for an evening when he has a long dinner with all those foreign dishes your people eat. Done up by his French cook.
Sensible man. I must tell you, Inspector, my opinion of your suspect has been gradually rising, and at the same time, my estimate of your podgers has been steadily declining. However, bring the man here tomorrow, and I will ask him a few questions.
Monsieur Vermont, this is Sergeant Podgers.
How do you do, sir?
Podgers, has this man Summertrees ever stopped you from entering any of his rooms in Park Lane?
No, sir. He's been quite open with me, you might say. Last Friday, he went to the safe, took out the money, had me count every shilling, and sent me to the bank to deposit same.
To deposit same,
What do you think of that, Vermont?
Well, frankly, I think he has seen through Podger's disguise, and being very sure of the scheme, is amused by the masquerade. Now then, Podger, about this aged clerk, he arrives every day with the money at what time?
At prompt six, sir.
Does he ring or let himself in with a latchkey?
With a latchkey.
How does he carry the money?
In a locked leather satchel, sir.
And you have seen him go directly to the dining room, unlock the safe, and put in the money?
Yes, sir.
So, it is the aged clerk who unlocks the leather money bag?
Yes, sir.
Let me see. That is three keys used within as many minutes. Did you ever see Mr. Summertrees with this bunch of keys? For instance, the time he opened the safe and you counted the money and took it to the bank, what key did he use?
I don't remember, sir.
Once the money is in and the safe locked up, what does the clerk do?
Goes to his room, sir.
Where is it?
On the third floor.
Where do you sleep, Podgers?
On the fourth floor, with the rest of the servants.
And Mr. Summertrees?
On the second floor, adjoining his study, sir.
The house consists of four stories and a basement, and you have gone through it all?
Yes, sir.
And you can let me in so that I can make an examination?
Oh, yes, sir. Thursdays is the help's day off, and Mr. Summertrees is always locked in his room, sir. I never disturb him.
Podgers, you are a sharp, alert, observant man.
Thank you, sir.
What happens that strikes you as unusual?
I can't rightly say, sir.
Call to mind some of the other households in which you have been an undercover man. Is there any way in which Mr. Summertrees' establishment differs from them?
Well, sir, he does stick to his room, writing pretty close.
Anything else, no matter how trivial?
He seems fond of reading, too. These ways, he's fond of newspapers. He takes all the morning and evening papers.
And what is done with them after he has read them?
Well, they're sold to the ragmen, sir, once a week.
Well, do they appear to have been read carefully? Anything cut out of them?
Not that I could see, sir.
Oh, I can't see what the man's reading habits have to do with anything.
Oh, a great deal. Podgers, today is Wednesday. Tomorrow morning, I would like you to bring here to my assistant, Jean-Pierre, whatever newspapers you have gathered this week to be sold.
Oh, Valmont, what's all this mystery about the newspapers?
Mystery? Au contraire, Inspector. I would say the entire case is perfectly plain.
What's perfectly plain?
Your suspect, Summertrees, is not a counterfeiter. Nor is he in any way connected with counterfeiters.
What is he then?
Something far more interesting. And?
And?
And that is what I plan to find out.
As the great Sherlock Holmes would say, hello, what have we here? Obviously, his French counterpart, Eugène Valmont, has an unusual analytical mind. I'll admit to you, he's several steps ahead of me. Where those steps lead, I hope we shall discover when I return shortly with Act Two.
Here's something to think about. How would you feel if you knew for a fact that somebody was trying to kill you? Not just an ordinary man, but a professional assassin paid $10 million to make sure you are very dead. Read Alastair MacLean's new novel, Sea Witch, a story of trained assassins and beautiful women and a man marked for murder. Sea Witch by Alastair MacLean. Read it quickly, because it's written like a nuclear bomb set to go off in seconds. Sea Witch by Alastair MacLean. It's a killer. Now in paperback from Fawcett.
It's a good day, a good year, no matter where you are. And those good deals at Goodyear help put more good years in your car.
Get Goodyear All-Weather 78 polyester cord tires now 4 for $79 plus old tire and 172 federal excise tax each for B7813 Blackwall. 4 for $79. A good deal at participating Goodyear outlets now.
And those good deals at Goodyear help put more good years in your car.
This summer, Delta Airlines invites you to the South's biggest party. It's a four-day, three-night vacation extravaganza in that exciting French, Spanish, Cajun southern city of New Orleans. Imagine yourself flip-flopping in a carriage through the French Quarter, buying baubles, bangles, and booty in Pirate's Alley, practicing your French over your morning café au lait. Imagine Antoine's, Bourbon Street, Preservation Hall, and all that jazz. Now, stop imagining and start packing. Your thrifty Delta Dream vacation price includes three nights at a top hotel, a New Orleans tour, a riverboat cruise, and more. Just RSVP to your travel agent. Then let Delta take you up the lazy river to the big summer bash in New Orleans.
The price of your vacation in New Orleans is $93 to $153 per person, double occupancy, plus Delta airfare. Delta is ready when you are.
Poised and alert is a hunting dog when his senses tell him his prey is not far off. Our Eugène Valmont has picked up a scent, but where does it lead? To whom? A fox? A wolf? Perhaps a man disguised in sheep's clothing? The following day, our French detective arrives at the Park Lane house. Policeman Podgers leads him to the third floor.
And this, I take it, is the room where the aged clerk who delivers the money spends his evenings.
And nights. Yes, sir. I advised you to come here today, Monsieur Valmont, because I accidentally opened the study of Mr. Summertrees and he's not there. I'm sure he'll be out for quite a few hours.
Ah, good. Now to make a thorough search.
What are you looking for, sir?
An escape hatch. You tell me that this clerk arrives with the money, puts it in the safe, goes up to this room, remains here all evening or night, and leaves in the morning.
Quite right, sir.
Don't you find it peculiar he should arrive at 6 and go to bed hungry? No dinner?
Oh, I never thought of that, sir.
Yeah. And you never told me what he looked like, either.
The clerk, sir? Quite old. Grey hair, grey beard.
Yes, and your master, Summertrees. How would you describe him?
Well, a younger man, quite clean-shaven. That's the closet door you're tapping on, sir.
Yes, I know it is. And I shall go inside the closet and continue tapping.
There must be a latch here somewhere. Huh. Why would anyone hang a pair of trousers on a hook back here? Now, suppose we give this hook a little twist.
Ah, good Lord, sir. The panel in the back of the closet is moving.
So it is. Podgers, I want you to go down one flight into Mr. Summertree's study and wait there for me.
Now, sir?
The sooner, the better. Podgers. Podgers, are you there?
Mr. Valmont. How did you get down here into Mr. Summerfield's closet?
I walked down, Podgers. There are two closed closets, one directly above the other, and behind them a connecting secret stairs. You see why this would be useful, Podgers.
Not entirely, sir.
The aged messenger who has all the keys puts the money in the safe, then goes up to his room on the third floor, into the closet, back down the secret stairs to the second floor closet, removes his beard, changes clothes, and so forth, and becomes who he really is, Mr. Summertrees. He has an excellent dinner prepared by an excellent French cook, and the next morning he reverses the procedure, becomes the aged messenger, and goes off to this shop on Tottenham Court Road. Podgers, I fear you've been watching empty rooms on the second and third floors, and a suspect who wasn't in them for over 2 weeks.
Well, I'll be... Why would he do all that?
There is a great deal of safety in a one-man operation. The following day, Friday, my assistant, Jean-Pierre, and I stood outside a certain antique shop in Tottenham Court Road, gazing at the bric-a-brac in the window.
Nom de Dieu, Monsieur Vermont. Look at the trash people sell as antique.
No worse, Jean-Pierre, than what people will buy. Did the rather stout Sergeant Podgers deliver a parcel of newspapers this morning?
Ah, yes, he brought them for you.
Not for me, Jean-Pierre, for you. When we return home, I would like an analysis and a full report by tea time.
Ah, oui, monsieur.
Now, shall we go inside the shop?
What can I do for you, gentlemen?
There is a small clock my friend and I saw in your window, standing on a big seashell and covered with little seashells. Tell me, how much is it?
7 and 6, sir. Shall I get it out so you can have a look at it?
By all means. Get it out and wrap it up. We shall buy it. Jean-Pierre, do you happen to have any small change about you?
I'm afraid I don't. Nothing smaller than a 5-pound note.
Oh, well, then, here's a sovereign, my good man. 20 shillings.
Do you mind the change being all in silver, sir?
No, not in the least.
Here we are, sir. I think you'll find that correct.
Thank you. Intriguing place you have here, sir. May I inquire your name?
Willoughby. Anything else that strikes your fancy?
Well, suppose we browse a bit. Have a look around.
By all means, by all means. The shop is yours, gentlemen. Now, wrap up your seashell clock, if you'll excuse me. Take your time, take your time.
Jean-Pierre, did you see that young man who just came into the shop?
I did. He went directly to the back room and this Willoughby right after him.
Hmm. Let me inspect the silver he gave me in change. Half a crown, 3 2-shilling pieces, 1, 2, 3, 4 separate shillings. Jean-Pierre, how do they look to you?
Well, I would say badly enough made to be the real thing from the British Mint.
Agreed. So we know he is not palming off counterfeit money. When he returns, we'll buy something small and give him the inspector's counterfeit 5-shilling piece and see how he reacts to that.
The young man who just came in. He is leaving, going out the door.
Gentlemen, you found anything else that caught your eye?
Yes, this little inkstand. How much is that?
2 shillings.
Do take it out of this.
5 shillings. Yes, sir. Here you are, sir. Oh, do excuse me, will you? I shall be right back.
Jean-Pierre, another young man. Quite a bit of traffic to the back room. At any rate, I'm assured my first conclusion was correct. He took the coin without blinking, so it is highly unlikely anything of a counterfeit nature goes on here. Jean-Pierre,
I'm going to move toward the front door. While our shopkeeper is engaged, I'm going to make a wax impression of the key. Should he return unexpectedly, detain him.
Over by the door is a pile of what looks like pamphlets ready to be mailed. I think I'll help myself to one. Did you make the key impression?
I did. Did you secure the pamphlet?
I did. I can see through that back door. The young man is getting up to leave, Mr. Willoughby.
A good time for us to go also. You have the purchases.
Monsieur Vermont, I have gone over all the newspapers Sergeant Podgers left here. Each one is more or less the same. The usual advertisements of pills and soap and so forth. Aside from that, there is one kind of advertisement common to all these papers. It says it can cure absent-mindedness. Well, let me show you, monsieur.
Let's see. Are you absent-minded? There is no need to be. You can cure confusion and forgetfulness. Apply by mail for our pamphlet. List your personal hobby. No fee, no treatment, no risk. You lose nothing. You may gain peace of mind. Dr. Stamford Willoughby, 1414 Tottenham Court Road, London, WC1.
This is one of his pamphlets I picked up at the shop. At the back it says, Dr. Willoughby will neither see patients nor correspond personally. Read and learn. You need not be absent-minded.
The good doctor has just secured another patient. I shall write to him that I am very absent-minded, that my hobby is, Jean-Pierre?
Collecting rare books.
Excellent. Rare first editions. And I signed my name. What was the name that we used on the Milburn murder case?
Alport Webster, sir. You were Alport Webster.
Yes, that is it. You still have the calling card with that name on it to slip onto my mailbox downstairs?
I'll attend to it. There was something else I had on my mind to report to you.
What could it be? The key. Did you give me the key?
That's it, of course. Here it is. I finished an hour ago from your wax impression.
Now, let me see. I'll put Webster, card on mailbox, letter to Willoughby, key to shop. Oh, what have I forgotten?
The rum in the tea. I forgot that.
You know, Jean, it occurs to me we are both getting a bit forgetful. Perhaps Dr. Willoughby will teach us more than we hoped for.
Good morning, Monsieur Valmont.
Good morning, Jean-Pierre.
There is a Mr. Angus McPherson outside. He's come to see a Mr. Alport Webster. Here. There is his card.
So soon, Mr. Webster has a visitor. Jean-Pierre, show the gentleman in.
You may come in, sir.
Mr. Webster, how kind of you to receive me.
Your card reads Angus McPherson, Rare Books. Now, in what can I serve you?
These three books I put before you. Are you interested at all in first editions, Mr. Webster?
It is the only thing I am interested in, but unfortunately they often run into a lot of money.
Aye, that's true. These three do run into some money. This one, it costs £100. However, it is an excellent value. The last one sold at auction here in London for £150. This book is £40, and this one, £10. I'm sure, Mr. Webster, you could not duplicate three such treasures at these prices in any bookshop in Britain.
Oh, yes, quite extraordinary. Beautifully got up, excellent condition. How, sir, for instance, did you learn that I was a collector?
Ah, Mr. Webster, I must confess, I chanced it. I do that very often. I enter a flat like this at a good address, send in my card to the name on the mailbox, and if I'm invited in, I ask what I asked you. Are you interested in rare editions? If he says no, I'll leave. If he says yes, then I show my books.
Mr. McPherson, since this is the first time you have called upon me, you have no objection if I ask the name of the owner of these books.
Oh, his name is Mr. Alf Summertrees of Park Lane. I shall be glad to leave the books with you and come back tomorrow when you've made up your mind.
Oh, no, no, no. It is rather a question of money.
I was going to tell you. I have a very good friend. And when people find it inconvenient to put down a considerable sum, he pays for the books. Then I make an arrangement with my customer to pay a certain amount each week, installments small enough to suit the client.
Suppose I take the book at £10. What installment should I have to pay each week?
What you like, sir. Would 5 shillings be too much?
I think not.
Done, then. If you pay me 5 shillings now, I will leave the book with you and will call on you this day each week for the next installment.
Good enough. Here you are, 5 shillings.
Ah, until Wednesday next, then, Mr. Webster.
A pleasure. Jean-Pierre, I'll have my man to show you out. Jean-Pierre, show Mr. Macpherson out. Good day, sir.
Yeah, and thank you. And happy reading. You've got a treasure there.
Very fine indeed. Gold tooled, red morocco leather, no less. Jean-Pierre, has our Mr. Macpherson left?
Yes, monsieur. Oh, is that a book you bought, sir?
No, Jean. It is cheese for our mousetrap in a most exquisite binding.
Unquestionably, Eugène Valmont is uncovering a swindle. How it works, who works it, who gains, who loses, are all questions to which you have every right to expect answers. But since when have I ever disappointed you? If you remain tuned in for Act 3, I'll be back shortly.
Hi, what is your round bottle of Lysol?
My what?
Your round bottle of Lysol.
Oh, Lysol in the red and yellow bottle?
Yes, Lysol brand disinfectant.
I don't know.
That round bottle of Lysol could be helping you every day in this hot weather.
I know.
Pour it in the wash to cut down on germs that make the laundry smell sour.
Oh, I do.
Use it in the bathroom.
That's where it is.
Oh.
I use it to kill athlete's foot fungus on the shower floor.
Sure, Lysol kills household germs on surfaces.
And germs that cause odors, too.
Right, sir.
Yeah.
Where's your round bottle of Lysol?
I don't know. My ex-wife must have it. She took everything else.
Now you can enjoy chewing gum again. Feel free to chew Freedent, the gum that won't stick to most dental work.
Feel free to chew Freedent. It's fresh and delicious to chew. Freedent gum. Peppermint in the green pack. And spearmint in the pack that's blue. Feel free to chew Freedent.
It won't stick to most dental work.
Freedent gum.
Surround yourself with comfortable feelings for those beautiful moments in life.
At Witt's Furniture.
There's a feeling that surrounds you when you're proud of your fine home. A reflection of the way you live and the people you have known. And when you need a friend to help you, you choose the very best. We can give you years of pleasure with beautiful things that last. We can promise years of pleasure with beautiful things that last.
Right for you. It's right at Wick's Furniture.
Wick's Furniture will brighten your home for those beautiful moments in life.
This is WBBM Chicago.
Some people live by bending the golden rule. Others would melt it down if they could. Chicanery has been going on for centuries. Even Samuel Johnson warned, saying, "If a man really believes there's no difference between virtue and vice, why, sir, when he leaves my house, I count my spoons." Good advice, it seems to me, today as it was 200 years ago.
Jean-Pierre, point your flashlight over here, onto the desk. I want to go through it.
Nice little antique shop, this.
So innocent with its seashell clocks, it's hard to believe Dr. Willoughby could be up to anything underhanded.
Dr. Willoughby, alias the aged messenger clerk, alias Ralph Summerfleeze.
Trees, sir.
Alias goodness knows how many other people. No, no, this is not an innocent store by far. Will you look at this collection of calling cards? Mm. Angus McPherson, rare coins. Angus McPherson, jewels for the connoisseur. Fine furniture. Cards for other accomplices as well. Mr. Rogers, Mr. Till, and these sheets. Mr. Till's list, Mr. Carmody's list, Mr. McPherson's list. There I am, Altport Webster, owing £10 weekly payments, 5 shillings. Except for the calling cards, these sheets are no evidence of wrongdoing, however. Merely a record. Names of clients. Ah, Jean-Pierre, I am disappointed.
A legitimate record of collections. Ah, too bad.
Well, I'll have a look at one of those ledgers on the shelf overhead. Now, this may be something. This is friend McPherson's account going back several years. 1896... 1893. Well, let's see who his clients were then. Mm-hmm. There is Lord Sentum. I know the gentleman. Absent-minded old codger. See page 47. 47. Mm-hmm. Lord Sentum. Purchased Chippendale wing chair, £50. Jean-Pierre, look. Look here. Look here. Lord Sentum has been paying £1 a week for that chair for more than 3 years. Look at this. His lordship has already paid in installments £170.
Ah, that's it.
That is it. Look at these names of collectors. This Summertrees has been employing a half dozen collectors who take in weekly installments from these absent-minded buyers long after the debts are paid. I'll take this page of Lord Sentum's account and copy out some names and addresses of friend Angus's present clients, and then we'll be off.
Costly business, buying on the installment plan.
Huh? Yes, especially if you're absent-minded.
Vermont, I got your message. Why are we meeting here in Trafalgar Square?
If one has secrets to divulge, the most public place is the most private. That's what we were taught in the Paris Sûreté.
Well, so what is it? You say you already have evidence against the man.
Evidence absolute and complete.
Well, then who are the counterfeiters?
My dear Hale, I have told you since the beginning that Summertrees was neither a counterfeiter nor a confederate. But I believe I have evidence sufficient to convict him of quite another offense, which is probably unique in the annals of crime. Inspector, I would like you to come by to my flat next Wednesday at about 5:45, prepared to make an arrest. Now, Inspector Hale, I should like to stand behind the door, so when it opens, voila. This study of mine will be in complete darkness, except for a light which will shine on you.
Oh, bit like theater, what?
So, when the young McPherson fellow enters, he will immediately see you towering there, full height in your official uniform, a frightening sight to behold.
Oh, thank you.
You see, Hale, I am anxious to study McPherson's face when he realizes he has walked in to confront a policeman.
Oh, what time is it?
One more minute and our friend will be here to collect his 5 shillings for the book I purchased.
Mr. Angus McPherson.
Show him in, Jean-Pierre. Hale, stand quite still in that light. Excellent.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I had expected to meet Mr. Webster.
Come in, McPherson.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Webster. I didn't see you at first.
Sit down, McPherson. You have called on Lord Sentum this week.
Aye, sir.
And collected £1 from him?
Yes, sir.
3 years ago in October, you sold Lord Sentum a Chippendale wing chair for £50.
Quite right, sir.
When you were here last week, you gave me Ralph Summertrees as the name of the gentleman who owns the books living in Park Lane. You knew at the time this man was your employer.
You also knew that the summer trees of Park Lane was identical with Dr. Willoughby of Tottenham Court Road.
I don't exactly see what you're driving at, sir. It's quite usual for a man to carry on a business under an assumed name. There's nothing illegal about that.
We will come to the illegality in a moment. You and Rogers and Tyrrell and three others are confederates of this Dr. Willoughby.
We are in his employ. But no more confederates than clerks usually are.
I think, McPherson, I have said enough to show you that the game is what you English call up. You are now in the presence of Mr. Spencer Hale of Scotland Yard, who is waiting to hear your confession.
Confession? Confederates? I must say, you use extraordinary terms.
What have you to say in your defense?
Where nothing criminal has been alleged, I see no necessity for defense. If you will be good enough to let me know of what you complain, I shall endeavor to make the point clear to you.
I show you this ledger sheet. Have you ever seen it before?
Oh, yes. It's been taken from our file. It's what I call my visiting list.
Oh, come, McPherson, why continue this charade? We all know about it. You never heard of Dr. Willoughby, I suppose.
Oh, yes, yes. He's the author of a silly pamphlet on absent-mindedness.
You are right. Have you ever met this learned doctor?
Oh, yes. Dr. Willoughby is the pen name of Mr. Summertrees.
Really? Well, we are extracting your confession bit by bit. McPherson, I think it would be far better if you were honest with us.
If you tell me what the charge is, I will then know what to say.
We charge you, sir, with obtaining money under false pretenses, a crime that has landed the biggest financiers in jail.
No, Valmont, we mustn't threaten, you know.
Take, for instance, Lord Semptam. You sold him a chair for £50 on the installment plan. He was to pay £1 a week, and in less than a year, his debt was liquidated. But he is an absent-minded man, as are all your clients. So you kept on collecting and collecting for more than 3 years. Now, do you understand the charge?
What you tell me is really a clever little scheme. The absent-minded league, one might call them. Most ingenious. I quite see how you could make such a mistake. You have jumped to the conclusion that we sold nothing to Lord Septim except a Chippendale chair 3 years ago. However, his lordship is a frequent customer of ours and has had many things from us at one time or another. We keep a sort of a running contract with him by which he pays us £1 a week.
Are you telling me that all your customers deal on the same plan? You keep selling and they keep paying?
Visiting list on your desk, Mr. Valmont, is incomplete. To understand it, you must refer to our business encyclopedias. Hey, take Lord Septim. His account is the number 102. Turn to that page of the encyclopedia of 1893. And you will see a list of all the items his lordship has purchased. If you will allow me to use your telephone for a moment, I will ask Mr. Summertrees to bring you the encyclopedia for 1893, and in 15 minutes, you will be satisfied that everything is legitimate. And may I use your phone?
Well, just a moment. I'll do the telephoning. What's his number?
Hyde Park, 140.
Hello, Central. Get me Hyde Park 140, please.
These encyclopedias contain the real secret of our business and are kept in Mr. Summertrees' safe.
Is this the residence of Mr. Summertrees? Oh, is that you, Podgers? Is Mr. Summertrees in? Oh, very well. This is Ale. I'm in Valmont's flat. Yes, yes, where you were the other day. Very well. Now go to Mr. Summertrees and say to him that Mr. McPherson wants the encyclopedia of 1893. Do you get that? Oh, yes, yes, he'll understand what it is. And Mr. McPherson wants it. Right. No, 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 don't mention my name at all. Just say that Mr. McPherson wants it and that you're to bring it. And you get into a cab and come here as quickly as possible. We're waiting.
Of course, Inspector Hale, you know your business best. But if your man arrests Summertrees, he'll make you the laughing stock of London. Now, while we're waiting, Monsieur Valmont, may I remind you, you owe me 5 shillings this week's installment.
Of course. Here you are.
Are you connected with Scotland Yard, Monsieur Valmont?
No, not at all.
Ah. Well, I can't think of anything else to say to pass the time. I suppose we shall just have to sit back and wait.
Podgers, give me the book. Let's see. The Encyclopedia of Sport, 1893. What sort of joke is this, MacPherson?
Oh, no. I might have known this would happen. If you'd allowed me to telephone, I should have made it perfectly clear to Mr. Summertrees what we wanted. There's an increasing demand for out-of-date books on sport, and he thought this is what I meant. There's nothing for it but to send your man back to Park Lane and tell Mr. Summertrees we wanted the locked volume of accounts of 1893.
Yes, this is Monsieur Valmont's residence. Oh, yes, Mr. McPherson's here. What? I can't hear you. Out of print. The Encyclopedia for 1893 is out of print.
Well, wait, who is this speaking?
Dr. Willoughby? Hello?
Oh, he's run off.
Here, stop him. Stop it, person.
What's he done?
He took that sheet from the ledger and threw it into the fire. He's destroyed evidence. MacPherson, how dare you burn that sheet?
Because, my dear Monsieur Valmont, it did not belong to you. Because you stole it. Because you had no right to it. And because you have no official standing in this country. I've always maintained these sheets and ledgers should not be kept. Mr. Summertrees, however, persisted. But he made this concession. If I ever telephoned him the word encyclopedia, he would at once burn those records. When done, he was to telephone back to me the words, "The encyclopedia is out of print." Now, gentlemen, either put me formally under arrest or see me to the door. This farce is now over. Ah, a very good evening to you, Inspector Hale. And a good evening to you, Monsieur Eugene Valmont. I shall give myself the pleasure of calling next Wednesday at 6 for my 5 shillings.
Believe it or not, the inspector from Scotland Yard and the retired detective from the French Sûreté are still friends. However, there is one certain case they never talk about. Nor do the words absent-mindedness or counterfeiting ever come into their conversation. And if one of them happens to say every cloud has a silver lining, the other turns pale. I shall be back shortly.
Here's something to think about. How would you feel if you knew for a fact that somebody was trying to kill you? Not just an ordinary man, but a professional assassin paid $10 million to make sure you are very dead. Read Alastair MacLean's new novel, Sea Witch, a story of trained assassins and beautiful women and a man marked for murder. Sea Witch by Alastair MacLean. Read it quickly, because it's written like a nuclear bomb set to go off in seconds. Sea Witch by Alastair MacLean. It's a killer. Now in paperback from Fawcett.
This is Terry Carter. High blood pressure has been called the silent killer because in the early stages there are no symptoms. The only way to tell if you have it is to have your blood pressure checked. Unchecked, high blood pressure can lead to stroke, heart failure, and kidney failure. The relationship between high blood pressure and kidney disease is complex and not fully understood. To find the answers takes research. You can help solve this medical mystery by contributing to your kidney foundation. Give now. Give the gift of life.
Thank you.
the world of the wicked, a certain kind of swindle is regarded as a very great act, the one that's foolproof. And the greatest artist is the one who takes the least risks. I dare say among the hundreds of tales of rogues and knaves I brought you on the Mystery Theater, this is the first in which flim-flam flourishes. I hope it is the last. Our cast included Norman Rose, Robert Dryden, and Lloyd Batista. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
May I introduce Colonel Dudley Bolger of the Norfolk Regiment and Sergeant Fred Meechner. They have suffered wounds, and for a little while we shall try to make them as comfortable as we can. Au revoir, Lee, and thank you.
How do you do, Sister White?
Pleased to meet you, miss.
Oh, my goodness, you're both English.
And both welcome.
Oh, English, but what of the Germans?
They won't find out. This will be our little secret. Now, if you'll both sign this form for the operation.
Operation? Oh, no, I don't want anything amputated. This foot will get better. I'm perfectly well, and Sergeant Meechin's head wound is quite healed. No, we don't need an operation. I thought you were going to help us cross the frontier.
That, gentlemen, is the operation.
Mrs. E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
I'm going to tell everybody about a delicious product chock full of natural flavor and low in calories. In fact, this product is so outstanding it adds zesty flavor to just about any dish you can imagine. I'm talking about the one and only Pennsylvania Dutchman mushrooms.
Pennsylvania Dutchman's great flavor isn't left to chance either. They're grown in climate-controlled conditions, expertly graded, and canned within 24 hours of picking.
Pennsylvania Dutchman mushrooms are a great buy, too. Many of us just don't realize that a 4-ounce can of Pennsylvania Dutchman mushrooms registers actual drained weight, while the same amount of fresh mushrooms lose 40% of their weight during cooking.
Choose stems and pieces, buttons, or whole mushrooms. You can count on Pennsylvania Dutchman mushrooms to add that touch of natural elegance to meals or snacks.
Pick up a can real soon at Jewel, Dominick's, Grocerland, Centrella, Kohl's, or Certified. And for a free recipes elegant booklet, just write Myers Canning Company, Box 276, Temple, Pennsylvania, 19560.
CBS News. The Carter administration has made the latest moves in a running battle with Moscow over journalists. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The U.S. government has decided to suspend the sale of some American computers to the Russians. Washington has also acted to get the authority to bar the exporting of oil technology equipment, something the Russians want. In addition, the American government has summoned representatives of the Soviet news agency TASS to discuss the future of its bureau in San Francisco. These actions follow the ruling of a Moscow judge Tuesday who said two American newspaper reporters slandered Soviet television. He ordered the journalists to pay fines and told their papers to print retractions. Both newspapers, the Baltimore Sun and the New York Times, have refused. More news in a moment.
Every time I shop, it seems prices have gone up. Well, I've found a way to save money without sacrificing my family's nutrition. A few times a week, I serve an egg dish for dinner. Scrambled eggs, omelets, the cookbooks are full of recipes. And egg dishes are high in protein.
Eggs are one of today's best food buys. For instance, when eggs cost 75 cents a dozen, they're only 50 cents a pound.
The incredible edible egg.
The American Egg Board.
Hi, I'm Alan Ludden. Say, tell me, do you enjoy good cooking? Do you do it yourself? Well, we'll help you make your cooking better Monday through Saturday right here when we meet the cook. Each day, a member of the CBS Radio food family joins me with special recipes, kitchen helpers, and lots of ideas for good eating. So why don't you make it a daily date to join me as we meet the cook Monday through Saturday on most of these CBS stations. You know, CBS is number one for a program in sports.
Supporters of the Equal Rights Amendment have won a victory in the House Judiciary Committee. The panel voted to extend the time for the states to ratify. They would have an additional 3 years. California Democrat Don Edwards, who sponsored the extension, says this could help put ERA over the mark.
The pendulum is starting to go the other way in favor of ERA. The latest polls indicate that the American people are more enthusiastic about it than they were a few months ago, and certainly the vote in the House Judiciary Committee today will be a big plus for ERA and in the entire nation.
ERA opponent Phyllis Schlafly says the action of the committee is illegal and expects it to be challenged.
The legal challenges, I believe, will come both from the ratified states on the ground that this bill will rescind the 28 ratifications that include the 7-year deadline, and then also from the non-ratifying states on the ground that the extension of time is unreasonable and unfair to them.
Unless the ERA timetable is expanded, the amendment must get approval by 3 more states by March of next year. Mayor Edward Bradley has changed his mind and says Los Angeles should not host the 1984 Summer Olympics. Harold Dow has a report.
Bradley said efforts to get the International Olympic Committee to let a private citizens group rather than Los Angeles taxpayers underwrite the 1984 Games failed. The International Olympic Committee awarded Los Angeles the 1984 Games last April at a meeting in Mexico City. And at that time, Mayor Bradley pledged that taxpayers' money would not be used to pay any bills. Bradley was obviously fearful that Los Angeles would go into debt for millions of dollars like Montreal did when it hosted the 1976 Games. Mayor Bradley may have also been encouraged to take this tough fiscal stand because of the recent overwhelming passage of Proposition 13, the taxpayers' way of limiting government spending in California. Bradley's recommendation for withdrawal of the bid is expected to be approved by the city council, since several members were already opposed to hosting the games in the first place. Harold Dow, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Opening their new Middle East peace discussions in England, the foreign ministers of Israel and Egypt Tuesday agreed on very little. They were not even able to come up to terms on the mechanics for the talks, where Secretary of State Cyrus Vance is acting as mediator. During a break in the session, an Egyptian spokesman said the gap is still very wide. CBS News continues in a moment.
In America, abandoned cars litter the land. But the people in Lexington, Kentucky, are removing 100 of them a month. We discard millions of used tires. But in New Jersey, they're turning old tires into playgrounds for children. Our streets and countryside have become dumping grounds for trash. But all across America, people are now recycling 8 million tons of it a year. We create staggering amounts of garbage. But in Virginia Beach, they turned a mountain of garbage into a recreational hillside. Pollution is destroying our beachfronts and waterways. But in Huntington, Long Island, they're planting seagrass which cleanses the water for wildlife and man. The cure for pollution is people working together. For a brochure on what you can do, write Keep America Beautiful Incorporated, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York, 10016. A public service message of this station, the Advertising Council, and Keep America Beautiful.
HEW Secretary Califano has labeled a sham the hospital cost control bill approved Tuesday by the House Commerce Committee. Califano says the bill bows to the wishes of the hospital industry and is an affront to the American people. The bill would ask the nation's hospitals to cut their cost increases. The original bill, favored by the Carter administration, threatens federal cost controls. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
Here's 78 on 78. News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
Good evening, everyone. It's 11:32, and this is Alan Bickley on WBBM News Radio 78 in Chicago.